What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
First things first, while plenty of teams still jockeying for playoff position, Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens are sitting pretty. They've already locked up home field advantage throughout the postseason thanks in part to a balanced offense, which includes wide receiver Willie Snead, who is kind enough to join us this morning. Willie, thanks so much for hanging with us.
No problem, guys. Good morning. Happy to be on.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. I'm not going to sit here and ask if you've already stopped to smell the Baltimore roses, but can you fully appreciate how much you guys have done so far this season, how successful you guys have come up to this point?
Yeah, it's been awesome. We got a great group of guys, and everything was set in stone when we first played in Miami this year, and I feel like we just took off from there. We had a couple bumps on the road throughout the season, but I think we really started to find our niche after Seattle, and we just started rolling from there. So we got a great group of guys, and we're definitely blessed and happy to be in this position.
And obviously, you guys have enormous things out in front of you. You guys have only checked off one of your goals, win the division, and then it goes on from there. With that said, we were talking briefly off the air about how much fun it does appear you guys are having. I know it's a job, but we all strive to have fun at work. It seems a little, and I say this complimentarily, like a high school team that really loves being around each other. Is that a fair way to put it? Can you maybe give us a window into the type of fun you guys are having, even as pro athletes?
Yeah, that's definitely the vibe. I mean, we have a bunch of young guys in our locker room, and they bring that energy all the time, just goofing around, playing around, but also being serious when we need to be. And, you know, we work really hard during the week, so when we get out there on Sundays, we just trying to have fun. We trying to have a ball with each other. And we know that we got each other's back. It's a brotherhood that we've built up since last year. And, you know, it's just great to see everything coming together. You know, that's how we like to keep it around here. We like to keep it loose. We like to have a good time. But, we're definitely all about the wins and making sure we put in the work in.
Willie, one of the keys to that success and having the fun is Lamar Jackson. You've been there for both of his seasons. How much has he improved, or how has he improved so much from last year to this year?
I think the thing with Lamar last year was just the confidence of coming in the NFL and being elite. He got thrown into the mix like halfway through the year. I believe we were 4-5 against Cincinnati when he first started. And, you know, he always had the ability to be great. I don't think anybody knew about his arm talent until this year. But he's definitely, you know, buttoned down, and he went to work this offseason. He wanted to throw. He wanted to be a better passer. And, you know, that's what he's been doing this year. So, you know, the things that Lamar has grown, and he's still growing as a player, as an athlete, as a, you know, just a professional, he's definitely got so much more room to grow. But this year, he's definitely taking the league by storm, and that's just all about, you know, the work he puts in and, you know, how serious he is about the game.
Willie, he's also become one of the most popular players. You can't even buy one of his jerseys anymore. And as a result, we now know almost everything there is to know about Lamar Jackson. But give us something, tell us something that we don't know about him, that only you guys would know from being with him day in and day out.
Man, dude is a clown, man. He loves to have fun. You hear me? He's always in the walkthroughs playing around. You know, he's in the locker room joking. You know, between him, Mark, and Marquise, you know, they're always having a ball. And that's that personality I was talking about earlier. We got a bunch of young guys, and he's one of them. And he just brings that fun energy, that fun life that, you know, a lot of teams, you know, might be missing. And, you know, he brings that energy, and we feed off of it. And, you know, he's a goofball, man. He loves that fun. He's a kid playing a grown man's game. So, you know, he's having fun, that's for sure.
Obviously, you guys have shown, mostly thanks to yourself, Hollywood Brown, Lamar, and the tight ends, that you guys can throw the ball as well as any team in football, but you're also a historically great running team. And one thing at all levels of football seems to be the case, running can sap the will of your opponent. It's seeing defenses get run on and run on and run on. When you're out there, even in games, because there's been some games this year where you don't have monster numbers, where you're blocking, do you hear some of the chatter or see over the course of the game almost some of the emotion drain from the face of the opponent? Like, again, they're just running at 6 yards every time. Can you feel that when you're out there, when the momentum turns within the game?
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely starts in the third quarter. You start to feel their will, and they, and then you kind of get a feeling of, you know, how well are they in shape? You know, like, are they still bringing it like they were in the first quarter, or are they kind of like, you know, they balancing it out, and we kind of taking our position on them. So, I mean, our run game is very heavy. You know, we put a lot of time in the offseason, you know, perfecting the run game and also the passing game. But that run game is serious, man. It starts to wear on people in like the third, the fourth quarter. You're really going to find out if teams are, you know, about that life. So, you know, it's fun. And, you know, we do a great job of making sure we get on our guys. And we have elite running backs, Gus Edwards, Mark Ingram, Justice Hill. You know, those guys make it happen. So between them and the O-line, you know, they doing their thing up front.
Willie, of course, before you went to Baltimore, you were in New Orleans with Drew Brees, the future Hall of Famer. How are he and Lamar as leaders, how are they similar and how are they different?
Yeah, well, Drew's 40 years old and Lamar is like 22. So
well,
there's a huge age difference. But as leaders, I think they're both really competitive. I know when I was in New Orleans, Drew was always playing games or like doing competitive stuff, like whether it was throwing footballs in a trash can or like playing, cornhole or something like that. He was very competitive. And I think Lamar is the same way in the sense that when it comes to game day, he doesn't like to lose. And he's going to do everything possible to make sure that we put ourselves in position to win games. And that's how Drew was, you know, all the time. And, you know, between his film study and his execution on game day, you know, that's what makes Drew elite. And I think Lamar is just at a young age where he's starting to learn each year that, you know, hey, I got to do this better. I got to watch film more on this team just to prepare himself. So the age difference is a huge gap, the experience. But I think when it comes to being leaders, they're both very competitive and they both have a will to win to get the job done.
You guys have obviously played all the best teams in the AFC. I know you have work to do. You guys, you guys have already clinched the one seed, so you're not going to play everyone week 17. You'll have the bye. If you do win the divisional round, who do you think you will be? Who do you think would give you the best game in the conference championship in Baltimore?
I think it'd be the Kansas City Chiefs because they have a very explosive offense, and we went down to the wire with them week three, and they've given us trouble over the years. Last year they gave us trouble, but I think that team right there is very explosive. Their defense is athletic enough to stay with us, but I think I like the Kansas City Chiefs. I like seeing them. Because the matchups are so great. It could be New England, but if you're asking me, I think it's going to be Kansas City.
Willie, I know you guys have a meeting that's about to start. We'll let you get to it. Thank you so much for spending the beginning part of your day with us. We appreciate it. Good luck this postseason. We'll be watching.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Willie. Good luck.
Appreciate it, man.
First things first, now joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook.
What up, B?
Good morning, brother.
We got a lot to talk about coming up this weekend. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys. It might already be a wrap for Jason Garrett after a very disappointing season, losing 4 of 5 games down the stretch in a tight NFC East race. But if he wants any chance of saving his job, he will need to beat Washington, and he will need to hope that the Eagles lose to the Giants. Quarterback Dak Prescott was asked about his coach entering the final regular season game of his contract. Take a listen to what he had to say.
No, I think it's the last game on mine as well. So I'd be damned if I speak on anybody else's future or their place.
Nick, what do you think about what Dak had to say?
I think that's more about him than about Jason Garrett. I think Dak, it's amazing. Dak, who's in his early 20s, seems to have a better understanding of public negotiation than Steven and Jerry Jones, who are combined, I think, 130 years old. He's got it. He understands. Yeah, you're damn straight. It might be the last game of my contract. This might be the last time y'all get to see me as your quarterback. And you can, again, this is not necessarily how I feel, but this is me projecting what I think Dak's feeling. And maybe y'all are a little disappointed in 7-8. I'm disappointed in 7-8, the way I played the last 5 weeks. You know what was more disappointing? Quincy Carter. You know what was more disappointing? The oasis or the desert of quarterbacks you went through between Troy Aikman and when Tony Romo got here. That 5-year stretch. So, yeah, I mean, Jason Garrett might not be here to misquote Magic Johnson. I might not be here either. So that to me is what Dak Prescott was saying there. It was not about Jason Garrett. It was about, reminder, guys, I played this whole year betting on myself, and we can have disagreements about quite how great I played, but ultimately, I got 26 touchdowns, 11 picks, a passer rating in the high 90s, and I'm going to throw for, what, almost 5,000 yards? He's thrown for 4,600 yards at this point. Y'all going to have to pay me, because that's how this business works my age, my position. So to me, Dak's comment was about himself much more so than about the coach.
I absolutely agree with you. He is basically saying, I bet on myself, and that's the way it is. And here's the other thing, and this is what happens in football around the league. I remember I was in San Francisco, and I went to the running back coach. He was like, listen, the wide receivers aren't blocking the way they're supposed to. We talked about it in meetings, and I said, you need to go talk to them, talking to the running back coach. He said, listen, I'm here to farm my own land. I'm worried about me, and me only, my group of guys. That's what Dak is saying. I'm worried about me. Jason Garrett had an opportunity to come out and say something about Dak's contract early in the season. I don't remember him saying anything. I don't remember Jason Garrett saying, hey, we need to pay Dak, make sure that he's taken care of. At no point did anyone say anything about Dak. Everyone talked about Zeke and him holding out. You know why? Because Dak was in place. He was in camp. Dak was there. Every time this franchise needs someone to be the face of the franchise, Dak has been that person. Now he's saying, hey, it's a money thing now. I'm worried about myself. I have absolutely no problem with Dak saying those things.
This is why I always talk about his intangibles and him being a leader, him being the adult in the room, and as you mentioned, maybe the adult in the organization, okay? Because he said the perfect thing. He didn't tie himself to Jason Garrett. He didn't say, oh, you know, yeah, we got to get it done. You know, coach is important. But he didn't throw him under the bus. So he played right in the middle, so you don't know, is he supporting him? Does he want him out? And he shouldn't be that guy, you know. And then when he says, I'm on the last, you know, game of my contract too, I felt like he was kind of saying, what I took from it is, it came off like understanding I haven't been that great myself. Y'all coming, I know what Jason's going through. I know the criticisms he's getting, and I myself haven't been that great. You know, I'm on the same situation. Maybe I won't get a contract. So I thought it came off as rightly a little bit self-deprecating, and I think it'll play well with people that see that quote. So again, I thought he handled it perfectly.
Here's why I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if the Cowboys lose this weekend. This team needs a lot of changes to be made this offseason for a team that's actually very healthy and have most of their pieces in place. There's going to be a head coaching change. They're going to have to pay either Dak or Amari or franchise one of them. There's going to be a couple of moving pieces because not everyone can stay So I think it's time for this team to look in the mirror and say, well, what are we doing? Like, who are we going to be the next couple years? What changes do you think this team is going to need to address right away, Nick?
Well, for all intents and purposes, it's going to be the same team that we saw this year on the field, just with a few less talented players. Cowboy fans tell me all the time, you don't understand our contracts. We've got all our linemen under contract. I do understand, but I also understand the way it's going to work when your quarterback's contract goes from $2.5 million to north of $25 or $35 million, that you are all of a sudden going to have to have some hard conversations and have some hard negotiations of, you are either taking a pay cut or we are going to release you even with 2 years left on your deal, so I think the only systemic change is going to be coaching staff.
Yeah.
And it might be a total overhaul of the coaching staff, potentially on both sides of the ball. I don't know if they elevate Chris Richard, or I don't know if they, depending on what coach they bring in, very often those guys want to bring in their entire staff themselves. But the reason, Brian, this year is such a missed opportunity for the Cowboys is it is very hard to figure a way they will be more talented next year than they were this year, because this was the final year of the little cheat code you have in the modern NFL, which is more than competent, if not star quarterback, who is making the less money than a great punter in this league, which is the situation when Seattle was in this situation, not just rookie contract quarterback, but mid-round rookie contract quarterback. What did they do with it? They won a Super Bowl and came a yard away from winning another one. What's Dallas going to have done with it? We made the divisional round twice. And so that's, to me, the bigger disappointment of the year is I have no reason to believe the team is – I don't think they can overhaul the roster. They can only overhaul the coaching staff.
The biggest change that they're going to make is going to be two. Of course, the head coach is going to set the culture and the character of the locker room and that football team, and they certainly need a different shift in their culture and character. The second one is the offensive coordinator. And the reason why I say that is because what are you going to do with Zeke, who's going to be the highest, one of the best, highest paid running backs in the league? And then Dak, does this offense continue to be an offense that's going to run the ball 25, 30 times a game? Or are you going to be an offense that leans a little bit more on the quarterback, similar to what they did early in their season? That's the biggest question and concern for this team. How does this offense play in the years moving forward? Do you get a guy like Lincoln Riley that has a big-time offense that can move the ball up and down the field, throwing the football? Or do you get a guy more conservative that wants to run the football? Ron Rivera wants to run it, take the air out of the ball, and play great defense. That's the biggest question, because you're going to have to pay Dak at some point. You're going to franchise him or make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. He's going to be a highest paid quarterback. You have already one of the highest paid running backs. Both of these guys are going to have to eat. Do you pay this guy to hand the ball off, or do you pay him to throw the ball down the field? That's the biggest question for them.
Well, that's a heck of a question you brought. We all know they got to get rid of Jason Garrett. Okay, but most coaches, I would think, the top coaches, they're going to want to have a lot of say in their staff, right?
Yep.
And so what is Kellen Moore was the golden boy. This is his first year. He's young. It's hard for me to see them getting rid of him. You know, I mean, I won't be shocked, because, again, if Jerry just changes course and says, look, I'm going to, like he did with Bill Parcells, we know it didn't work out, but you go get a coach that you're going to let run everything, they're probably going to want to bring in a lot of their own staff, if not an entire new staff. And that's where it'll be interesting to see, though, what they do with Kellen Moore, because he was supposed to change the offense up, and he did, and obviously it didn't work out. So, but that's the major change they need to make. Otherwise, look, you've said it. In this league, coaching is more important than any other major sport. So if they bring in the right coach, I think with this roster healthy, they can win and be a factor in the NFC.
You made a good point. A real good coach is going to want to bring at least one of their coordinators. Brian Westbrook, talking New England Patriots, who still have a little work to do if they want a first-round bye. They need either a win against the Dolphins this weekend or a Chiefs loss to the Chargers. Should be easy in theory, as the Patriots crushed Miami 43-0 earlier in the season. But, Brian, do the Patriots absolutely need this bye if they want any chance of making another Super Bowl?
Well, I think they do if they want to have a chance. I don't know that they have a huge chance, but if you want to have a chance, you certainly need that bye. You need those home playoff games. And it's because Tom Brady hasn't been great on the road. Even though he's been special at home and all of the road game, with all the home games that they've had, all the Super Bowls that they've won, on the road in the playoffs, he's been 4-4. And so when I watch this team all season long, I look at this team in the first 8 games. The defense is scoring. They're getting special plays from the special teams. They're averaging almost 30 points a game, right? Then I watch the last 7 games. I'm watching this team defensively. You're still getting some big plays. You're not getting the scores. The special teams still getting some big plays. You're not getting as many scores that way. And offensively, you're only averaging 20 points a game. That's a big difference. And so having that home bye, having the ability to get Edelman healthy, I think is going to help this team. Giving Tom Brady, an older quarterback, a little bit of a break, it certainly helps this football team. But playing at Gillette Stadium is the biggest part that's going to help this Patriots offense.
They unquestionably need the bye. All right, they've never won the Super Bowl without the bye. They've never been to a Super Bowl without the bye. Okay, and that's when their offense was really good. They still couldn't get over the hump without that. So they definitely need it now. And they're playing, you know, I don't think it's just a coincidence. Maybe I'm, you know, wearing rose-colored glasses, but I don't think it was just a coincidence that last week, now the playoffs are nearing, that Tom Brady plays better, that the running game gets on track, and I think they're going to be playing their best football at the right time. I don't think they'll win the AFC. I don't pick them as a favorite, but I do give them a shot. I think I give more of a shot than Nick does, but they still need to buy, no matter what. And Bill Belichick is the best in the league. I don't think anybody disputes that, at preparing for the opponent. 15-5 in the regular season off a bye week, and they're going to need it. If they face Kansas City in the second round, they're going to need the extra time to prepare for Pat Mahomes. And that's something Casey has to worry about, because Belichick with 2 weeks to prepare is dangerous. We saw what he did to Sean McVay, mm-hmm. and you're still seeing the repercussions mm-hmm. from that with the Rams. So, yeah, they need the bye week, and if they get it, I think they'll be relatively dangerous.
Let's think about this from a slightly different angle. If they don't get a bye, it means that after they finally, for the first time in 2 months, played a great football game against the Bills with the division on the line in theory, they lost at home to the Dolphins as 17-point favorites. So if they don't get the bye, then everyone, that, the train that I've been riding as a near solo conductor for the last year or so, that the Patriots are done and we are just waiting to see it be official, it will be overrun with folks jumping on with no tickets if they don't get a bye. Because it will mean Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brian Flores, former Patriot defensive coordinator, as the head coach of Miami, which I think is an interesting wrinkle of this game, went to Foxborough and beat them in a game they needed to have. So if they don't have a bye, they're drawing dead. Not drawing slim, drawing dead, not only because they have the extra playoff game, but because they would have played their single worst game of the season in their game that will be set 6 or 7 days before their playoff game. With a bye, I still am not a believer that a team that, to my eye, has played one complete game of football, both sides of the ball, for four quarters, one time in the last 8 weeks, is all of a sudden going to be able to do it against the two best teams in the conference. Kansas City in round one or round two at home, and then in Baltimore in round three. Now, is there a scenario where Tennessee gets the sixth seed, upsets Kansas City, and so New England then gets Buffalo or Houston, and then Tennessee goes to Baltimore and upsets them? If the Patriots' path is the Bills and then the Titans, and both games are in Gillette, there's your 1%. But a realistic path involves them having to face Kansas City again. And one note on that, they're 30-10 in the postseason under Belichick and Brady, which is just a bananas. In fact, they've played 40 playoff games, won 30 of them. They're 17-1 against teams they did not play in the regular season. The only time they've lost a playoff game against a team they were facing for the first time was the Super Bowl to Nick Foles and the Eagles. They are 13-9, which is good, but not overwhelming, against teams they are facing for a second time. So one of the narratives I've heard is, the Patriots, the second time around. In the postseason, that has not been the case for them. If you're going to get them, you need to have faced them earlier in the year to have a real shot at it. The Giants teams that beat them in the Super Bowl, both of them played them in the regular season. So what do Kansas City and Baltimore have in common? They played them in the regular season. Houston as well, if somehow they have to play Houston. So for all those reasons, even with a bye, I'm not buying them. But without a bye, they got no shot because it means they lost to Miami in a game they needed.
With that bye, and you made a great point, Chris, the 2 weeks off is huge because it gives Belichick an opportunity to scheme differently. I remember we played him in the Super Bowl, and of course, there's a 2 weeks between the last regular season game, the postseason game, NFC Championship, and the Super Bowl. So we're preparing for 2 weeks straight to face a 3-4 defense. Three down linemen, four linebackers. They come out in a 4-3. Four down linemen and three linebackers. So offensively, your mind is blown because they changed everything up. But in that 2 weeks period, they've done a total shift in their completely different defense, something they hadn't shown all year long. That's what whatever team that comes into Gillette may be facing if they get that bye. That's going to be huge.
I brought this up earlier. That's a lot of that falls on Bill Belichick now. I mean, you know that we haven't seen the best of Tom Brady. This is where we always have this debate that we've had for years and years. Is it Brady or is it Belichick? Well, Brady has clearly fallen off of this peak where he's been. If they are going to go deep, you don't think this now maybe saw you, the argument sways a little bit more towards Belichick?
If they win the Super Bowl with Brady at 42 years old, unless Brady all of a sudden really makes me look like an idiot.
But he did last week. Not that he made you look like an idiot. I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. No. But He played a good game.
Brady played a great, I thought the best game he's played all year against Buffalo, and I think he deserves immense credit for it. I don't think that is duplicable time and time again in the postseason. If the Patriots win the Super Bowl, I don't think it's going to be because Brady has a bunch of throwback performances. I think it's going to be because of what you said, Jenna, which is that this defense does what it did in the Super Bowl. Brady was not very good in the Super Bowl against the Rams, but he didn't have to be because Belichick, with the 2 weeks to prepare, threw things at them they were not ready for and held the second highest scoring offense in all of football to 3 points in a game they also had 2 weeks to get ready for.
One of the biggest busts this season in the Cleveland Browns. They were the trendy preseason pick to make a deep playoff run, and yet they currently
sit out of the playoffs at 6-9. One of the reasons why? Their quarterback. Baker had some of the best stats ever for a rookie last season, then followed it up with some of the worst stats for any quarterback this season. But he says he's keeping it all in perspective.
I never thought it was going to be easy, but it's definitely a very big process. That's the beauty of it, to, you know, down the road, looking back on it through the struggles and everything that we've endured. And it's going to continue to have bumps in the road, but I think that's going to be the beauty of it, of me wishing that I was going to be here and having that come true, and just seeing where it's going to go from here on out.
So I listened to this soundbite three different times because I wanted to see if he was being humbled by this past season or if he was just answering a reporter's question. Do you think, though, Nick, that Baker is still the right guy to turn this Browns franchise around?
Well, I think he's the right quarterback for the team in the short term and the long term, but I think there are some obvious major adjustments that need to be made. But first of all, I just want to say this. I don't believe Baker's coming. I don't believe he didn't think it was going to be easy. It's always been easy for Baker. He walks on to Texas Tech. It's supposed to be the hardest path possible, become a starting anything, much less quarterback, as a walk-on. And he's excellent. Good enough to where he can walk on at an even bigger time school in Oklahoma. And in back-to-back years, sets the all-time single-season efficiency record for any quarterback in college football history. And then he goes to the NFL. And a few weeks into his career, once he is named the starter, he kind of hits his groove and he sets the rookie touchdown passing record. It's always been easier than it should have been for Baker because of his talent, because of his drive, because of work ethic. It's not like things were handed to him. He's earned it. So I don't believe that Baker thought this year was going to be different. Why would he think it would be different than every other step of his football career? So I do think there has been some humbling, whether he wanted it or not. Now, to more directly answer your question, Jenna, is he the right? I think he's the right quarterback to turn the Browns franchise around, to help them get on the track it looked like they were on after last year. But I think he is absolutely not the right person to be the emotional leader of your franchise. They need a big adult with a big personality, a real adult with a big personality, pardon me, in that room to be the emotional center and honestly to be the true face of the franchise, which is why some of these unproven college head coaches is not the way I would go for the Browns, because he is not yet, I believe, emotionally mature enough to be starting NFL quarterback. I think he is talented enough to be starting NFL quarterback, but he can't be the person that turns around the locker room. He has to just be the person that gives you high quality quarterback play, and that is the entirety of his job description until he grows into the rest of the job.
Wow, that's interesting. First of all, let me say this. I agree with you in that I think he can be the quarterback there, and they can be successful. I don't like saying he's the guy to turn the franchise around because, quite honestly, I have more faith in OBJ, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, and Kareem Hunt than I do in Baker. But I do think with that, I mean, think of what I just named. Yep. That with that type of arsenal around him, I think he's a good enough quarterback where they can be a really successful team. But what you said is interesting, because when you think about the teams that are really the most successful, especially the ones that are successful every year, New England. Who said, now Belichick obviously is a strong presence as the coach, but Brady kind of sets the emotional tone of that team, right? Seattle, Russell Wilson, same thing. You know, Aaron Rodgers, he's had his issues there.
But it's but been still, his team.
Right.
For sure.
New Orleans, you're right.
Drew Brees. Like, I don't know of what team where the quarterback isn't that guy, where they're successful year after year after year. Now, Cam is a guy that may be little like Baker, up and down, you know, kind of a strange kind of leader at times. And that team has been up and down like that as well.
So, but don't you think that typically young quarterbacks grow into that? Like, Patrick Mahomes is the star of the Chiefs. But the voice of the Chiefs is Andy Reid. The only reason Patrick Mahomes became the face of it is because he was so sensational immediately. Russell Wilson became the voice of Seattle. But early on, he had some pushback, and it was Pete Carroll and a kind of that Legion of Boom leadership. And while Drew Brees at this point is a partner with Sean Payton, early on, this was a Sean Payton operation that Drew Brees was a godsend for. And certainly Belichick set the tone early for New England before Brady matured into it. So I think for young quarterbacks, typically, they do need, the most successful ones that we've seen, a strong established head coach to help shepherd them along the way, so to speak.
Well, I think Mahomes and Wilson, you saw the character, not that Baker doesn't have character, I'm not saying that, sure. But you saw character traits in them that screamed leader.
Yep.
You know, the work ethic and just the way they handled themselves, their sound bites and things like that. Now, we haven't seen many like Baker. I mean, obviously you had Jim McMahon with Chicago, but he that was 1 year, really, where they won the Super Bowl. We haven't seen many quarterbacks lead this way. I'm not saying it can't be done. This is a different day and age. But I thought that was just very interesting, because if he can't be that emotional leader, now maybe he will grow into it. And that's one of my main points and why I want to give Baker the chance and not throw him out and say he can't get it done because he's had a second bad year. They need a better coaching staff. You know, Freddie Kitchens obviously has had trouble calling the plays. You talked about it earlier in the week against Baltimore, just at the end of the first half, how it was madness. And their red zone play calling has been horrible. So with a better coaching staff, I don't know if they keep Todd Monken or not, but he really hasn't, the offensive coordinator, hasn't gotten a chance to call the plays this year. I think he would be doing things a lot differently. But whatever they do, I'm sure Freddie Kitchens won't be there. They bring in a better coaching staff. I think that will help Baker. And for all his bad stats this year, he is 20th in QBR, which isn't great. But we know QBR takes into context
everything.
His QBR is still higher than Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff, and Josh Allen.
Well, the Goff thing's interesting, because who is the voice in the face of the Rams? The coach. I would say the voice in face That's of the fair. Niners is the coach. Like, hell, it's the defensive coach as well. We see him on the sidelines all fired up all the time. Like, I think for some of these young quarterbacks, it doesn't mean that it won't one day where they have full reign over everything. But early on, if you've got, I just do wonder, so much of this is circumstantial, if Baker had a Sean McVay type in his life, or even a more established guy, how different it would have been than going from Hugh Jackson to interim coach Greg Williams to Freddie Kitchens.
And then the other thing with Baker is you love who he is. It's what made him. It's what gotten here. And then you want to say, okay, you need to change that to be whoever we think the quarterback should be. And then you got to play with those two sides. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.